Signing this document would mean nothing to the White Tower, Rand said, apparently ignoring the comment. I can't very well forbid all of you to influence the others. That would be foolishness. It's already foolishness, Elaine said.
Elaine was not feeling so proud of him any longer, Egwene thought.
And as long as there are political games to be played, Rand continued to Egwene, the Aes Sedai will master them. In fact, this document benefits you. The White Tower has always believed war to be, as they say, short-sighted. Instead, I demand something else of you. The seals.
I am their watcher.
In name only. They were only just discovered, and I possess them. It is out of respect for your traditional title that I approached you about them first.
Approached me? You didn't make a request, she said. You didn't make a demand. You came, told me what you were going to do, and walked away.
I have the seals, he repeated, and I will break them. I won't allow anything, not even you, to come between me and protecting this world.
All around them, arguments over the document continued, rulers muttering with their confidants and neighbors. Egwene stepped forward, facing Rand across the small table, the two of them ignored for the moment.
You won't break them if I stop you, Rand.
Why would you want to stop me, Egwene? Give me a single reason why it would be a bad idea.
A single reason other than that it will let the Dark One loose on the world?
He was not loose during the War of Power, Rand said. He could touch the world, but the bore being opened will not loose him. Not immediately.
And what was the cost of letting him touch the world? What are they now? Horrors, terrors, destruction. You know what is happening to the land. The dead walking, the strange twisting of the pattern. This is what happens with the seals only weakened. What happens if we actually break them? The light only knows.
It is a risk that must be taken.
I don't agree. Rand, you don't know what releasing his seals will do. You don't know if it might let him escape. You don't know how close he was to getting out when the boar was last secured. Shattering those seals could destroy the world itself. What if our only hope lies in the fact that he's hindered this time, not completely free?
It won't work, Egwene.
You don't know that. How can you?
He hesitated. Many things in life are uncertain.
So you don't know, she said. Well, I have been looking, reading, listening. Have you read the works of those who have studied this, thought about it?
Aes Sedai's speculation.
The only information we have, Rand. Open the Dark One's prison and all could be lost. We have to be more careful. This is what the Amarlin Seat is for. This is part of why the White Tower was founded in the first place.
He actually hesitated.
Light, he was thinking. Could she be getting through to him?
I don't like it, Egwene, Rand said softly. If I go up against him and the seals are not broken, my only choice will be to create another imperfect solution. A patch, even worse than the one last time. Because with the old weakened seals there, I'll just be spreading new plaster over deep cracks. Who knows how long the seals would last this time? In a few centuries, we could have this same fight all over again.
Is that so bad? Egwene said. At least it's sure. You sealed the boar last time. You know how to do it.
We could end up with the taint again.
We're ready for it this time. No, it wouldn't be ideal. But Rand, do we really want to risk this? Risk the fate of every living being? Why not take the simple path, the known path? Mend the seals again, shore up the prison.
No, Egwene.
Rand backed away.
Light. Is this what it's about? You want Sidene to be tainted again. You Aes Sedai. You're threatened by the idea of men who can channel, undermining your authority.
Rand Althor, don't you dare be that level of a fool.
He met her eyes. The rulers seemed to be paying little attention to this conversation, despite the fact that the world depended on it. They pored over Rand's document, muttering in outrage. Perhaps that was what he had intended, to distract them with the document, then pounce for the real fight. Slowly the rage melted from his face, and he raised his hand to the side of his head. "Light, Egwene. You can still do it, like the sister I never had. Tie my mind in knots and have me raving at you and loving you at the same time."
"At least I'm consistent," she said. They were now speaking very softly, leaning across the table toward one another. To the side, Perrin and Nynaeve were probably close enough to hear, and Min had joined them. Gawain had returned, but he kept his distance. Cadswain rounded the room, looking in the other direction. Too pointedly, she was listening in. "I am not making this argument in some fool hope to restore the taint," Egwene said. "You know I'm better than that. This is about protecting humankind. I can't believe you are willing to risk everything on a slender chance."
"A slender chance?" Rand said. "We're talking about entering darkness instead of founding another Age of Legends. We could have peace, an end to suffering. Or we could have another breaking. Light, Egwene. I don't know for certain if I could mend the seals, or make new ones, in the same way. The Dark One has to be ready for that plan.
And you have another one?"
"I've been telling it to you. I break the seals to get rid of the old imperfect plug, and try again in a new way."
"The world itself is the cost of failure, Rand."
She thought a moment.
"There's more here. What aren't you telling me?" Rand looked hesitant, and for a moment he seemed the child she'd once caught sneaking bites of Mistress Cawthon's pies with Matt.
"I'm going to kill him, Egwene."
"Who? Moradin?"
"The Dark One."
She drew back in shock. "I'm sorry, what did you—"
"I'm going to kill him," Rand said passionately, leaning in. "I'm going to end the Dark One. We will never have true peace so long as he is there lurking. I'll rip open the prison, I'll enter it, and I'll face him. I'll build a new prison if I have to, but first I'm going to try to end all of this. Protect the pattern, the wheel, for good."
"Light, Rand. You're insane."
"Yes, that is part of the price I have paid. Fortunately, only a man with shaken wits would be daring enough to try this."
"I'll fight you, Rand," she whispered. "I won't let you pull all of us into this. Listen to reason. The White Tower should be guiding you here."
"I've known the White Tower's guidance, Egwene," he replied. "In a box. Beaten every day."
The two locked eyes across the table. Nearby, other arguments continued.
"I don't mind signing this," Tenobia said. "It looks fine to me."
"Bah," Gregorin snarled. "You borderlanders never care anything for southern politics. You'll sign it? Well, good for you. I, however, won't chain my country to the wall."
"Curious," Isar said.
The calm man shook his head, pure white topknot bobbing.
"As I understand, it's not your country, Gregorin, unless you're assuming that the Lord Dragon will die, and that Matin Stepanaeus will not demand his throne back. He may be willing for the Lord Dragon to wear the laurel crown, but not you, I'm sure."
"Isn't all of this meaningless?" Alyandra asked. "The Shanshan are our worry now, aren't they? Peace can never exist so long as they are there."
"Yes," Gregorin said. "The Shanshan and those cursed white cloaks."
"We will sign it," Galad said.
Somehow the Lord Captain Commander of the Children of the Light had ended up holding the official copy of the document. Egwene didn't look at him. It was hard not to stare. She loved Gawain and not Galad, but, well, it was hard not to stare.
Mayenne will sign it as well, Berylaine said. I find the Lord Dragon's will to be perfectly just.
Of course you'd sign it, Darlin sniffed. My Lord Dragon, this document seems designed to protect the interests of some nations more than others.
I want to hear what his third requirement is, Roadron said. I don't care anything for talk of the seals, that is Aes Sedai business. He claimed there were three requirements, and we have heard only two.
Rand raised an eyebrow.
The third and final price, the last thing you will pay me in exchange for my life on the slopes of Shale Ghul, is this. I command your armies for the last battle. Utterly and completely. You do as I say, go where I say, fight where I say.
This caused a larger eruption of arguments. It was obviously the least outrageous of the three demands, though it was impossible for reasons Egwene had already determined. The rulers treated it as an attack on their sovereignty. Gregorin glowered at Rand through the din, only maintaining the most threadbare respect. Amusing, since he had the least authority of them all. Darlin shook his head, and Elaine's face was livid. Those on Rand's side argued back, primarily the Borderlanders. They're desperate, Egwene thought. They're being overrun. They probably thought that if command were given to the dragon, he would immediately march to the defense of the Borderlands. Darlin and Gregorin would never agree to that. Not with the Seanchan breathing down their necks. Light. What a mess. Egwene listened to the arguments, hoping they would set Rand on edge. Once they might have. Now he stood and watched, arms folded behind his back. His face became serene, though she was increasingly certain that was a mask. She'd seen flashes of his temper inside. Rand certainly was more in control of himself now, but he was by no means emotionless. Egwene actually found herself smiling. For all of his complaints about Aes Sedai, for all of his insistence that he wouldn't be controlled by them, he was acting more and more like one of them himself. She prepared to speak and take control, but something in the tent changed. A feeling to the air. Her eyes seemed drawn to Rand. Sounds came from outside, sounds she couldn't place. A faint cracking sound? What was he doing? The arguments trailed off. One by one, the rulers turned toward him. The sunlight outside dimmed, and she was glad for those spheres of light he had made.
I need you, Rand said softly to them. The land itself needs you. You argue. I knew that you would, but we no longer have time for arguments. Know this. You cannot talk me out of my designs. You cannot make me obey you. No force of arms nor weave of the One Power can make me face the Dark One for you. I must do it of my own choice.
You would really toss the world for this, Lord Dragon? Berylaine asked.
Egwene smiled. The light skirt suddenly didn't seem so certain of the side she had chosen.
I won't have to, Rand said. You'll sign it. To fail to do so means death.
So it's an extortion, Darlin snapped.
No, Rand said, smiling toward the sea folk, who had said little as they stood near Perrin. They had simply read the document and nodded among themselves, as if impressed.
No, Darlin, it's not extortion. It's an arrangement. I have something you want. Something you need. Me. My blood. I will die. We've all known this from the start. The prophecies demand it. As you wish this of me, I will sell it to you in exchange for a legacy of peace to balance out the legacy of destruction I gave the world last time.
He scanned the meeting,
looking at each ruler in turn. Egwene felt his determination almost like a physical thing. Perhaps it was his Tavira nature, or perhaps it was just the weight of the moment. A pressure rose inside the pavilion, making it difficult to breathe. "He's going to do it," she thought. "They'll complain, but they'll bend." "No," Egwene said loudly, her voice breaking the air. "No, Randall Thor, we will not be bullied into signing your document, into giving you sole control of this battle. And you're an utter fool if you think I believe you'd let the world, your father, your friends, all those you love, all of humanity, be slaughtered by Trollocs if we defy you." He met her eyes, and suddenly she wasn't certain. Light. He wouldn't really refuse, would he? Would he really sacrifice the world?
"You dare call the Lord Dragon foolish?" demanded Narishma.
"The Amyrlin is not to be spoken to that way," Sylviana said, stepping up beside Egwene. The arguments began again, this time louder. Rand kept Egwene's eyes, and she saw the flush of anger rise in his face. The shouting rose, tension mounting, unrest, anger, old hatreds flaring anew, fueled by terror. Rand rested his hand on the sword he wore these days, the one with the dragons on the scabbard, his other arm folded behind his back.
"I will have my price, Egwene," he growled.
"Require if you wish, Rand. You are not the creator. If you go to the last battle with this foolishness, we're all dead anyway. If I fight you, then there is a chance I can change your mind."
"Ever the White Tower has been a spear at my throat," Rand snapped. "Ever, Egwene. And now you really have become one of them."
She met his stare. Inside, however, she was beginning to lose certainty. What if these negotiations did break down? Would she really drive her soldiers to fight Rand's? She felt as if she had tripped over a rock at the top of a cliff and was tipping toward the fall. There had to be a way to stop this, to salvage it. Rand started to turn away. If he left the pavilion, that would be the end of it. "Rand," she said. He froze.
"I will not budge, Egwene."
"Don't do this," she said. "Don't throw it all away."
"It cannot be helped."
"Yes, it can. All you have to do is stop being such a light-burned, wool-headed, stubborn fool for once." Egwene drew herself back. How could she have spoken to him as if they were back in Emmon's Field at their beginning? Rand stared at her for a moment.
"Well, you could certainly stop being a spoiled, self-certain, unmitigated brat for once, Egwene."
He threw up his arms.
"Blood and ashes. This was a waste of time."
He was very nearly right. Egwene didn't notice someone new entering the tent. Rand did, however, and he spun as the flaps parted and let in light. He frowned at the interloper. His frown died as soon as he saw the person who entered. Moiraine.
Chapter 6. A Knack. The pavilion grew quiet again. Perrin hated a racket, and the people's sense weren't any better. Frustration, anger, fear, terror. Much of it was directed at the woman standing just inside the entrance to the pavilion.
"Matt, you blessed fool," Perrin thought, breaking into a grin. "You did it. You actually did it."
For the first time in a while, thinking of Matt made the colors swirl in his vision. He saw Matt on a horse, riding along a dusty road, tinkering with something he held. Perrin dismissed the image. Where had Matt gotten to now? Why hadn't he come back with Moiraine? It didn't matter. Moiraine was back.
Light. Moiraine.
Perrin started toward her to give her an embrace, but Fahil caught him by the sleeve. He followed her eyes.
Rand. His face had grown pale. He stumbled away from the table as if all else had been forgotten and pushed his way to Moraine. He hesitantly reached out and touched her face. "By my mother's grave," Rand whispered, then fell to his knees before her. "How?" Moraine smiled, resting a hand on his shoulder. "The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, Rand. Have you forgotten that?" "I..." "Not as you will, Dragon Reborn," she said gently. "Not as any of us will. Perhaps one day it will weave itself out of existence. I do not believe that day is today, nor a day soon."
"Who is this woman?" Roadron said. "And what is she blathering about? I..."
He cut off as something unseen flicked him on the side of the head, causing him to jump. Perrin glanced at Rand, then noticed the smile on Egwene's lips. He caught the scent of her satisfaction despite all of the people in the pavilion. Nynaeve and Min, standing nearby, smelled utterly shocked. The Light willing Nynaeve would stay that way for a little while. Shouting at Moraine wouldn't help right now.
"You haven't answered my question," Rand said.
"But I have," Moraine replied fondly. "It just was not the answer you wanted."
Rand knelt, then threw his head back and laughed.
"Light Moraine, you haven't changed, have you?"
"We all change day by day," she replied, then smiled. "Me more than some lately."
"Stand up. It is I who should be kneeling before you, Lord Dragon. We all should."
Rand rose and stepped back to allow Moraine farther into the pavilion. Perrin caught another scent and smiled as Tom Marilyn slipped into the tent behind her. The old gleeman winked at Perrin.
"Moraine," Egwene said, stepping forward. "The White Tower welcomes you back with open arms. Your service has not been forgotten."
"Hmm," Moraine said.
"Yes, I should think that having discovered a future Amarlin would reflect well upon me. That is a relief, as I believe I was on a path to stilling, if not execution, before."
"Things have changed."
"Obviously," Moraine nodded. "Mother?"
She passed Perrin and gave him a squeeze on the arm, eyes twinkling. One by one, the Borderlander rulers took swords in hands and bowed or curtsied toward her. Each one seemed to know her personally. Many of the others in the tent still looked baffled, though Darlin obviously knew who she was. He was more thoughtful than confused. Moraine hesitated beside Nynaeve. Perrin couldn't catch Nynaeve's scent right then. That seemed ominous to him.
"Oh, Light. Here it comes."
Nynaeve enfolded Moraine in a powerful embrace. Moraine stood for a moment, smelling distinctly shocked, hands out to the sides. Finally, she returned the embrace in a somewhat maternal way, patting Nynaeve on the back. Nynaeve released her, pulling back, then wiped a tear from her eye.
"Don't you dare tell Lan about this," she growled.
"I would not dream of it," Moraine said, moving on to stand in the center of the pavilion.
"Insufferable woman," Nynaeve grumbled as she wiped a tear from the other eye.
"Moraine," Egwene said, "you've come at just the right time."
"I have a knack for that."
"Well," Egwene continued as Rand stepped back up to the table. "Rand, the Dragon Reborn, has decided to hold this land for ransom to his demands, refusing to do his duty unless we agree to his whims."
Moraine pursed her lips, taking up the contract for the dragon's peace as Galad set it on the table for her. She scanned it.
"Who is this woman?" Roadron said. "And why do we..." "Would you stop that?"
He raised a hand as if he'd been smacked by a thread of air, then glared at Egwene. However, this time, one of the nearby Ashiman was the one who smelled satisfied. Nice shot, Grady, Perrin whispered. Thank you, Lord Perrin.
Grady would know her only by legend, of course, but tales of Moraine had spread among those who followed Rand.
Well, Egwene said.
And it shall come to pass that what men made shall be shattered,
Moraine whispered.
The shadow shall lie across the pattern of the age, and the Dark One shall once more lay his hand upon the world of man. Women shall weep and men quail as the nations of the earth are rent like rotting cloth. Neither shall anything stand nor abide.
The people shuffled their feet. Perrin looked questioningly at Rand.
Yet one shall be born to face the shadow, Moraine said more loudly. Born once more as he was born before and shall be born again. Time without end. The dragon shall be reborn, and there shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth at his rebirth. In sackcloth and ashes shall he clothe the people, and he shall break the world again by his coming, tearing apart all ties that bind. Like the unfettered dawn shall he blind us and burn us, yet shall the dragon reborn confront the shadow at the last battle, and his blood shall give us the light. Let tears flow, O ye people of the world. Weep for your salvation.
Aes Sedai, Darlin said. Pardon, but this is very ominous.
At least it shall be a salvation, Moraine said. Tell me, Your Majesty. That prophecy commands you to shed tears. Are you to weep because your salvation comes with such pain and worry? Or instead are you to weep for your salvation, for the man who will suffer for you? The only one we know for certain will not walk away from this fight.
She turned to Rand.
These demands are unfair, Gregorin said. He requires us to keep our borders as they are.
He shall slay his people with the sword of peace, Moraine said, and destroy them with the leaf.
It's the Koreathon cycle. I've heard these words before.
The seals, Moraine, Egwene said. He's planning to break them. He defies the authority of the Amarlin seat.
Moraine did not look surprised. Perrin suspected she'd been listening outside before entering. It was very like her.
Oh, Egwene, Moraine said. Have you forgotten? The unstained tower breaks and bends knee to the forgotten sign.
Egwene blushed.
There can be no health in us, nor any good thing grow, Moraine quoted. For the land is one with the dragon reborn, and he one with the land. Soul of fire, heart of stone.
She looked to Gregorin.
In pride he conquers, forcing the proud to yield.
To the borderlanders,
he calls upon the mountains to kneel.
To the sea folk,
and the seas to give way.
To Perrin, then Barilane,
and the very skies to bow.
To Darlin,
pray that the heart of stone remembers tears.
Then finally to Elaine,
and the soul of fire, love. You cannot fight this. None of you can. I am sorry. You think he has come to this on his own?
She held up the document.
The pattern is balance. It is not good nor evil, not wisdom nor foolishness. To the pattern these things matter not. Yet it will find balance. The last age ended with a breaking, and so the next one will begin with peace, even if it must be shoved down your throats like medicine given to a screaming babe.
If I may speak,
an Aes Sedai wearing a brown shawl stepped forward.
You may, Rand said.
This is a wise document, Lord Dragon, the brown said.
She was a stout woman, more direct of tone than Perrin expected from a brown.
But I see an enormous flaw to it, one that was raised earlier.
So long as the Shan-Chan are exempt from it, it will be meaningless. There will be no peace so long as they conquer.
That's an issue, Elaine said, arms folded.
But not the only one. Rand, I see what you're trying to do, and I love you for it. That does not remove the fact that this document is fundamentally untenable. For a peace treaty to work, both sides must continue to wish for peace because of the benefits presented. This grants no way to settle disputes. They will arise. They always do. Any document like this must give a way to settle such things. You must set up a way to punish an infraction, save for the other countries to enter all-out war. Without that change, little grievances will mount and build pressure over years until they explode. As this is, it all but requires the nations to fall upon the first that breaks the peace. It does not stop them from setting up a puppet regime in the fallen kingdom, or even in another kingdom. Over time, I fear this treaty will be viewed as null. What good is it if it protects only on paper? The end result of this will be war. Massive, overpowering war. You will have peace for a time, particularly while those who revere you live. But for every year of peace you gain, you will earn one of greater destruction once the thing falls apart.
Rand rested his fingers on the document.
I will make peace with the Shan-Chan. We will add a provision. If their ruler does not sign, then the document is voided. Will you all agree to it then?
That fixes the lesser problem, Elaine said softly, but not the larger one, Rand.
There is yet a greater issue here,
a new voice said. Perrin turned, surprised. Avienda? She and the other Aiel had not participated in the arguments. They'd only watched. Perrin had almost forgotten they were there.
You too, Rand said. Come to walk on the shards of my dream, Avienda?
Don't be a child, Randall Thor, the woman said, striding up to place her finger on the document. You have toe.
I left you out of it, Rand protested. I trust you, and all of the Aiel. The Aiel aren't in it, Isar said. Light, how did we miss that?
It is an insult, Avienda said.
Perrin frowned. She smelled very serious. From any other Aiel, he'd expect that sharp scent to be followed by a pulled-up veil and a raised spear.
Avienda, Rand said, smiling. The others are about to hang me for putting them in it, and you are angry for being left out?
I demand my boon of you, she said. This is it. Place the Aiel in your document, your dragon's peace. We will leave you otherwise.
You don't speak for all of them, Avienda, Rand said. You can't.
All of the tense wise ones stepped up behind Avienda, as if in rhythm together. Rand blinked.
Avienda carries our honor, Soralia said.
Don't be foolish, Randall Thor, Malayne added.
This is a thing of the women, Sarinda added. We will not be satisfied until we are treated equally with the Wetlanders.
Is this thing too difficult for us? Amis asked. Do you insult us by implying we are weaker than the others?
You're all insane, Rand said. Do you realize that this would forbid you from fighting one another?
Not from fighting, Avienda said. From fighting without cause.
War is your purpose, Rand said.
If you believe that, Randall Thor, she said, voice cold. I have trained you poorly indeed.
She speaks wisdom, Ruark said, stepping up to the front of the crowd. Our purpose was to prepare for your need of us at this last battle. Our purpose was to be strong enough to be preserved. We will need another purpose. I have buried blood feuds for you, Randall Thor. I will not take them up again. I have friends now that I would rather not kill.
Madness, Rand said, shaking his head.
All right, I'll put you in.
Avienda seemed satisfied, but something bothered Perrin. He didn't understand the Aiel. Light,
He didn't understand Gaul, who had been with him for so long. Still, he'd noticed that the Aiel liked to be doing something. Even when they lounged, they were alert. When other men gamed or diced, the Aiel were often quietly doing something of use.
"Rand," Perrin said, stepping up, taking him by the arm. "A moment, please."
Rand hesitated, then nodded to him and waved his hand.
"We're sealed off. They can't hear us now. What is this about?" "Well, I just noticed something. The Aiel are like tools."
"All right."
"And tools that aren't used grow rusty," Perrin said.
"Which is why they raid one another," Rand said, rubbing his temple. "To keep up their skills. That is why I exempted them."
"Like, Perrin, I think this is going to be a disaster. If we include them in this document..." "I don't think you have a choice now," Perrin said. "The others will never sign it if the Aiel are left out."
"I don't know if they'll sign it anyway," Rand said. He looked longingly at the sheet on the table.
"It was such a beautiful dream, Perrin. A dream of good for humanity. I thought I had them. Right up until Egwene called my bluff, I thought I had them."
It was a good thing others couldn't smell Rand's emotions, or everyone there would have known that he'd never refused to go against the Dark One. Rand showed not a hint of it on his face, but inside, Perrin knew he had been as nervous as a boy at his first shearing.
"Rand, don't you see?" Perrin said. "The solution."
Rand frowned at him.
"The Aiel," Perrin said. "The tool that needs to be used, a treaty that needs to be enforced."
Rand hesitated, then grinned widely.
"You're a genius, Perrin." "So long as it's about blacksmithing, I suppose I know a thing or two."
"But this isn't about blacksmithing, Perrin."
"Of course it is," Perrin said.
How could Rand not see that? Rand turned, no doubt ending his weave. He strode up to the document, then held it up toward one of his clerks in the back of the pavilion.
"I want two provisions added. First, this document is void if not signed by either the Shanchan Daughter of the Nine Moons or the Empress. Second, the Aiel, all but the Shido, are to be written into the document as enforcers of the peace and mediators of disputes between nations. Any nation may call upon them if they feel abused, and the Aiel, not enemy armies, will provide redress. They can hunt criminals across national borders. They are to be subject to the laws of the nations in which they reside at the time, but they are not subjects of that nation."
He turned to Elaine.
"There is your enforcement, Elaine, the way to keep your small pressures from building."
"The Aiel?" she asked skeptically.
"Will you agree to this, Rourke?" Rand asked. "Bael? Jaron? The rest of you? You claim to be left without purpose, and Perrin sees you as a tool that needs to be worked. Will you take this charge? To prevent war? To punish those who do wrong? To work with the rulers of nations to see justice served?"
"Justice as we see it, Randall Thor," Ruark said. "Or as they see it."
"It will have to be according to the conscience of the Aiel," Rand said. "If they call for you, they will have to know that they'll receive your justice. This will not work if the Aiel simply become pawns. Your autonomy will be what makes this effective."
Gregorin and Darlin began to complain, but Rand silenced them with a look. Perrin nodded to himself, arms folded. Their complaints were weaker now than they had been before. He smelled thoughtfulness from many of them.
"They see this as an opportunity," he realized. "They view the Aiel as savages, and think they'll be easy to manipulate once Rand is gone."
Perrin grinned, imagining their defeat should they attempt that course.
"This is very sudden," Ruark said.
"Welcome to the dinner party," Elaine added, still staring daggers at Rand. "Try the soup."
Oddly, she smelled proud. Strange woman.
I warn you, Ruark, Rand said. You will need to change your ways. The Aiel will have to act together on these matters. The chiefs and wise ones will need to hold council to make decisions together. One clan cannot fight a battle while other clans disagree and fight for the other side.
We will speak of it, Ruark said, nodding to the other Aiel chiefs. This will mean an end to the Aiel.
A beginning, as well, Rand said.
The Aiel clan chiefs and the wise ones gathered separately to one side and spoke in soft voices. Abienda lingered, with Rand staring away, troubled. Perrin heard him whisper something, so soft Perrin's ears barely made it out.
Your dream now, when you wake from this life, will be no more.
Rand's clerks, smelling frantic, came forward to begin working on the document's additions. The woman Cadswain watched all events with a stern expression. She smelled extremely proud.
Add a provision, Rand said. The Aiel can call upon other nations to aid them in their enforcement if they decide that their own numbers will not be enough. Give formal methods by which nations can petition the Aiel for redress or for permission to attack a foe.
The clerks nodded, working harder.
You act as if this were settled, Egwene said, eyes on Rand.
Oh, it is far from that, Moraine said. Rand, I have some words for you.
Are they words I will like? He asked.
I suspect not. Tell me, why do you need to command the armies yourself? You will be traveling to Sheogul, where you will no doubt be unable to contact anyone.
Somebody needs to be in command, Moraine.
On this point, I believe all would agree.
Rand folded his arms behind his back, smelling troubled.
I have taken responsibility for this people, Moraine. I want to see that they're cared for, that the brutalities of this battle are minimized.
I fear that is a poor reason to lead a battle, Moraine said softly. You do not fight to preserve your troops. You fight to win. This leader need not be you, Rand. It should not be you.
I won't have this battle turn into a tangle, Moraine, he said. If you could see the mistakes we made last time, the confusion that can result when everyone thinks they are in control. Battle is turmoil, but we still need an ultimate commander to make decisions, to hold everything together.
What of the White Tower?
Ramonda asked, stepping, half-shoving, her way up beside Egwene.
We have the resources for efficient travel between battlefronts, we are cool-headed in times that would crush others, and we are trusted by all nations.
That last bit prompted a raised eyebrow from Darlin.
The White Tower does seem the optimal choice, Lord Dragon, Tenobia added.
No, Rand said. The Amarlin is many things, but a leader of war? I do not think it is a wise choice.
Egwene, oddly, said nothing. Perrin studied her. He'd have thought that she'd jump at the chance to lead the war herself.
It should be one of us, Darlin said, chosen from those who would go to battle here.
I suppose, Rand said. So long as you all know who is in command, I will cede this point. You must meet my other demands, however.
You still insist that you must break the seals? Egwene said. Do not worry, Egwene, Moraine said, smiling. He is not going to break the seals.
Rand's face darkened. Egwene smiled.
You are going to break them, Moraine said to Egwene.
What? Of course I'm not.
You are the watcher of the seals, mother, Moraine said. Did you not hear what I said earlier? It shall come to pass that what men made shall be shattered, and the shadow shall lie across the pattern of the age, and the Dark One shall once more lay his hand upon the world of man? It must happen.
Egwene seemed troubled.
You have seen this, have you not?
Moraine whispered.
What have you dreamed, mother?
Egwene didn't respond at first.
What did you see?
Moraine pressed, stepping closer to her.
His feet crunching, Egwene said, staring Moiraine in the eyes. As he strode forward, Rand's feet stepped on the shards of the Dark One's prison. I saw him in another dream, hacking away at it to open it. But I never actually saw him opening it, Moiraine. The shards were there, Mother, Moiraine said. The seals had been broken. Dreams are subject to interpretation. You know the truth of this one. It does need to be done, and the seals are yours. You will break them when the time is right. Rand, Lord Dragon Reborn, it is time to give them to her.
I don't like this, Moiraine, he said.
Then not much has changed, has it? She asked lightly. I believe you have often resisted doing what you are supposed to, particularly when I am the one to point it out to you.
He paused for a moment, then laughed, reaching into the pocket of his coat. He slipped out 3 discs of Quendiar, each split by a sinuous line down the center. He set them on the table.
How will she know the time? He asked.
She will, Moiraine said.
Egwene smelled skeptical, and Perrin didn't blame her. Moiraine always had believed in following the weave of the pattern and bowing to the wheel's turnings. Perrin didn't see it that way. He figured you made your own path and trusted in your own arms to do what needed to be done. The pattern wasn't a thing to depend on. Egwene was Aes Sedai. It seemed that she felt she should see it as Moiraine did. Either that, or she was willing to agree and just take those seals into her hands.
I'll break them when I feel it must be done, she said, taking the seals.
You'll sign then?
Rand took the document as the clerks protested the hastiness with which they'd had to work. It now had several additions on the back. One of the clerks cried out, reaching for the sand, but Rand did something with the One Power, drying the ink instantly as he placed the document before Egwene.
I will, she said, holding out a hand for a pen.
She read the provisions carefully, the other sisters looking over her shoulders, chins on the back. One of the clerks cried out, reaching for the sand, but Rand did something with the One Power, drying the ink instantly as he placed the document before Egwene.
I will, she said, holding out a hand for a pen.
She read the provisions carefully, the other sisters looking over her shoulders. They nodded, one at a time. Egwene put pen to paper.
And now the rest, Rand said, turning to measure reactions.
Light, but he's grown clever, Fael whispered beside Perrin. Do you realize what he did?
What?
Perrin said, scratching his beard.
He brought with him all he knew would support him, Fael whispered. The Borderlanders, who had signed practically anything to garner help for their homelands. Arad Daman, which he helped most recently. The Aiel, well, all right, who knows what the Aiel will do at a given time, but the idea stands. Then he let Egwene gather the others. It's genius, Perrin. That way, with her bringing this coalition against him, all he really had to do was convince her. Once he swayed her to his side, the others would look foolish to stand apart.
Indeed, as the rulers began to sign, Berylaine going first and most eagerly, those who had supported Egwene started to fidget. Darlin stepped up and took the pen. He hesitated for a moment, then signed. Rhaegorin followed, then the Borderlanders, each in turn followed by the King of Arad Daman. Even Roedran, who still seemed to find this entire thing a fiasco, signed. Perrin found that curious.
He blusters a lot, Perrin said to Fael, but he knows this is good for his kingdom.
Yes, she said. He's been acting a buffoon partially to throw everyone off, make them dismiss him. The document outlines current borders of nations to remain as they are, Fael said. That's a huge boon to someone trying to stabilize his rule. But...
But?
The Seanchan? Fael said softly. If Rand persuades them, does that allow them to keep the countries they have now? The women who are Damani?
Are they allowed to slap one of those collars on any woman who passes their border?
The tense stilled. Perhaps Fail had spoken more loudly than she'd intended. Perrin sometimes had trouble remembering what ordinary people could and couldn't hear.
I will deal with the Shan Chan, Rand said.
He stood over the table, watching as each ruler looked over the document, spoke with the counselors they'd brought, then signed.
How? Darlin asked. They do not wish to make peace with you, Lord Dragon. I do think they'll make this document meaningless.
Once we are done here, Rand said softly, I will go to them. They will sign.
And if they do not?
Gregorin demanded. Rand rested his hand on the table, fingers spread.
I may have to destroy them, or at least their ability to make war in the near future.
The pavilion grew still.
Could you do that? Darlin asked.
I'm not certain, Rand admitted. If I can, it may leave me weakened in a time when I need all of my strength. Light, it may be my only choice. A terrible choice, when I left them last time. We cannot have them striking at our backs while we fight the shadow.
He shook his head, and Min stepped up to take his arm.
I will find a way to deal with them. Somehow I'll find a way.
The signing progressed. Some did it with great flourish, others in more casual fashion. Rand had Perrin, Gawain, Fail, and Garth Bryn sign as well. He seemed to want anyone here who might rise to a position of leadership to have their names on the document. Finally, only Elaine remained. Rand held out the quill to her.
This is a difficult thing you ask of me, Rand, Elaine said, arms folded, golden hair gleaming in the light of his globes.
Why had the sky gone dim outside? Rand didn't seem worried, but Perrin feared that the clouds had consumed the sky. A dangerous sign, if they now held sway where Rand had once kept them back.
I know it is difficult, Rand said. Perhaps if I gave you something in return?
What?
The war, Rand said.
He turned to the rulers.
You wanted one of you to lead the last battle. Will you accept Andor and its queen in this role?
Too young, Darlin said. Too new.
No offense, Your Majesty.
Al-Salam snorted.
You're one to talk, Darlin. Half the monarchs present have held their thrones for a year or less.
What of the Borderlanders? Alejandra asked. They've fought against the Blight all of their lives.
We are overrun, Pytar said.
He shook his head.
One of us cannot coordinate this. Andor is as good a choice as any.
Andor is suffering an invasion of its own, Darlin noted.
You all are, or soon will be, Rand said.
Elaine Trakand is a leader to her core. She taught me much of what I know about leadership. She has learned tactics from a great captain, and I'm certain she will rely upon all the great captains for advice. Someone must lead. Will you all accept her in this position?
The others reluctantly nodded agreement. Rand turned to Elaine.
All right, Rand, she said. I'll do this, and I will sign. But you had better find a way to deal with the Shan Chan. I want to see their ruler's name on this document. None of us will be safe until it's there.
What of the women held by the Shan Chan? Ruark asked. I will admit, Randall Thor, our intention was to declare a blood feud with these invaders the moment more pressing battles were won. If their ruler signs it, Rand said, I will ask about trading for goods to retrieve those channelers they have stolen. I will try to persuade them to release the lands they hold and return to their own country.
What if they refuse? Egwene asked, shaking her head. Will you let them sign it without giving on those points?
Thousands are enslaved, Rand.
We cannot defeat them,
Avienda said, speaking softly. Perrin eyed her. She smelled frustrated but determined.
If we go to war with them, we will fall.
"Avienda is right," Amis said. "The Aiel will not fight the Shonchan."
Ruark, startled, looked back and forth between the two.
"They have done horrible things," Rand said, "but so far the lands they have taken have benefited from strong leadership. If forced to it, I am content to allow them the lands they have so long as they do not spread further. As for the women, what is done is done. Let us worry about the world itself first, then do what we can for those held captive."
Elaine held the document for a moment, perhaps for the drama of it, then bent down and added her name to the bottom with a flourish.
"It is done," Moraine said as Rand picked up the document. "You will have peace this time, Lord Dragon."
"We must survive first," he said, holding the document with reverence. "I will leave you to make your battle preparations. I need to complete some tasks, Shonchan included, before I travel to Sheogul. I do have a request for you, however. There is a dear friend who needs us."
Angry lightning blistered the clouded sky. Despite the shade, sweat lined Lan's neck, matting his hair underneath his helmet. He'd not worn one in years. Much of his time with Moraine had required them to be nondescript, and helmets were anything but.
How bad is it?"
Andir grimaced, holding his side and leaning back against a rock. Lan looked to the battle. The Shadow Spawn were amassing again. The monsters almost seemed to blend and shift together, one enormous dark force of howling, miasmic hatred, as thick as the air, which seemed to hold in the heat and the humidity, like a merchant hoarding fine rugs.
"It's bad," Lan said.
"Knew it would be,"
Andir said, breathing in and out quickly, blood seeping between his fingers.
"Nazar?"
"Gone," Lan said.
The white-haired man had gone down in the same setu that had nearly taken Andir. Lan's rescue had not been quick enough. I saw him gut a trollic as it killed him.
"May the last embrace of the mother,"
Andir spasmed in pain.
May the
last embrace of the mother welcome you home," Lan said softly.
"Don't look at me that way, Lan,"
Andir said.
"We all knew what this was going to be when we joined you."
"That is why I tried to stop you,"
Andir scowled.
"Peace, Andir," Lan said, rising. "What I wished was selfish. I came to die for Melkir. I have no right to deny that privilege to others."
"Lord Mandragoran!"
Prince Kaisel rode up, his once fine armor bloodstained and dented. The Kandori prince still looked too young for this battle, but he'd proven himself to be as cool-headed as any grizzled veteran.
"They're forming up again."
Lan walked across the rocky ground to where a groom held Mandarb. The black stallion bore cuts on his flanks from trollic weapons. Thank the light, they were superficial. Lan rested a hand on the horse's neck as Mandarb snorted. Nearby, his standard-bearer, a bald man named Jofel, raised the flag of Melkir, the Golden Crane. This was his fifth standard-bearer since yesterday. Lan's forces had seized the gap with their initial charge, shoving the Shadowspawn back before they were able to emerge into the valley. That was more than Lan had expected. The gap was a long, narrow piece of rocky ground nestled between craggy rises and peaks. Holding this position required nothing clever. You stood, you died, and you killed. As long as you could. Lan commanded a cavalry. It wasn't ideal for this kind of work. Cavalries did best where they could spread out and had room to charge. But the passage through Tarwin's Gap was narrow enough that only a small number of Trollocs could come through at once. That gave Lan a chance. At least it was more difficult for the Trollocs to take advantage of their superior numbers. They would have to pay a butcher's bill for every yard they gained. Trolloc carcasses had formed an almost fur-like blanket leading through the canyon.
Each time the creatures tried to push through the gorge, landsmen had resisted them with lances and pole arms, swords and arrows, eventually slaughtering thousands and leaving them heaped for their fellows to climb over. But each clash similarly reduced land's numbers. Each assault forced his men to withdraw a little farther, toward the mouth of the gap. They were less than 100 feet from it now. Lan felt the fatigue pressing deep into his bones. "Our forces?" Lan asked Prince Keisel.
"Maybe 6,000 still able to ride Daishan?"
"Less than half of what they'd started with the day before."
"Tell them to mount up."
Keisel looked shocked.
"We're going to retreat?"
Lan turned to the lad. Keisel paled. Lan had been told that his gaze could unnerve any man. Moraine had liked to joke that he could outstare rocks and had the patience of an oak. Well, he didn't feel as sure of himself as people thought, but this boy should have known better than to ask if they were retreating.
"Of course," Lan said. "And then we're going to attack."
"Attack?" Keisel said.
"We're on the defensive."
"They'll sweep us out," Lan said, pulling himself into Mandarb's saddle.
"We're exhausted, worn out, and nearly broken. If we stand here and let them come at us again, we'll fall without a whimper."
Lan knew an ending when he saw one.
"Pass the orders," Lan said to Prince Keisel. "We will slowly pull out of the pass. You have the rest of the troops assemble on the plain, mounted and ready to attack the Shadowspawn as they come out of the gap. A charge will do great damage. They won't know what hit them."
"Won't we be surrounded and overrun if we leave the pass?" Keisel asked.
"This is the best we can do with the resources we have."
"And then?"
"And then they eventually break through, slice our force into pieces, and overrun us."
Keisel sat for a moment, then nodded. Again, Lan was impressed. He'd assumed this boy had come with him to find the glory of battle, to fight at the side of Daishan and sweep their enemies away. But no, Keisel was a borderlander to the core. He hadn't come for glory. He'd come because he'd had to.
"Good lad."
"Give the order now. The men will be glad to get back on their horses again." Too many of them had been forced to fight on foot because of the lack of maneuverability in the narrow confines. Keisel gave the orders, and those orders burned through Lan's men like an autumn fire. Lan saw Andir being helped into his saddle by Bulan.
"Andir,"
Lan said, healing Mandarb toward him.
"You are in no condition to ride. Go join the wounded at the back camp."
"So I lie back there, and let the Trollocs butcher me after finishing you lot?" Andir leaned forward in the saddle, teetering slightly, and Bulan looked up with concern. Andir waved him off and forced himself upright.
"We've already moved the mountain, Lan. Let's budge this feather and be through with it."
Lan could offer no argument. He called the retreat to the men ahead of him in the pass. His remaining men bunched around him, slowly backing out toward the plain. The Trollocs hooted and yelled in excitement. They knew that once they were free of the walls that restricted their movement, they would win this fight easily. Lan and his small force left the narrow confines of the gap, those on foot running toward their horses tethered near the mouth of the canyon. The Trollocs, for once, needed no push from the Murdral to charge. Their footfalls were a low rumble on the stony ground. Several hundred yards out of the gap, Lan slowed Mandarb and turned. Andir brought his horse up beside Lan's with difficulty, and they were joined by the other riders, who formed long lines of cavalry. Bulan cantered up to the other side of Lan. The storm of shadow spawn neared the mouth of the gap, a charging force of thousands of Trollocs that would soon burst out into the open and try to consume them. Lan's forces were silently lined up around him. Many were old men, the last remnants of their fallen kingdom. This force that had managed to plug the narrow gap now seemed tiny on the much larger plain.
"Bulan," Lan said,
Yes, Lord Mandragoran.
You claim to have failed me years ago.
Yes, my lord, it...
Any failing on your part is forgotten, Lan said, eyes forward. I am proud to have given you your Hadori.
Kaisel rode up, nodding to Lan.
We are ready, Daishan.
This is for the best,
Andir said, grimacing, still holding to his wound, barely able to remain in the saddle.
It is what must be, Lan said. Not an argument.
Not exactly.
No, Andir said. It is more than that, Lan. Malkyr is like a tree that lost its roots to white worms, the branches withering slowly. I'd rather be burned away in a flash.
I'd rather charge, Bulin said, voice growing firm.
I'd rather charge now than let them overrun us. Let us die on the attack, with swords pointed home.
Lan nodded, turning and raising his sword high above his head. He gave no speeches. He had given those already. The men knew what this was. One more charge, while they still had some strength, would mean something. Fewer Shadowspawn to flood into civilized lands. Fewer Trollocs to kill those who could not fight back. The enemy seemed endless. A slavering, rampaging horde without battle line or discipline. Anger. Destruction incarnate. Thousands upon thousands of them. They came forward like floodwaters suddenly released, surging out of the canyon. Lan's little force was but a pebble before them. The men silently raised their swords to him, a final salute.
No!
Lan yelled. Now as they begin to spread out, it will do the most damage. Lan kicked Mandarb forward, leading the way. Andir galloped beside Lan, clinging to his pommel with both hands. He didn't try to raise a weapon. He'd have fallen from his saddle if he had. Nynaeve was too far away for Lan to feel much of her through the bond, but sometimes very powerful emotions could stand out despite the distance. He tried to project confidence in case it reached her. Pride in his men, love for her. He wished deeply for those to be the last things she remembered of him.
My arm will be the sword.
Hooves clattered on the ground. The Trollocs ahead hooted in delight, realizing that their prey had transformed a retreat into a charge of men rushing right into their grasp.
My breast itself a shield.
Lan could hear a voice, his father's voice, speaking these words. That was foolish, of course. Lan had been a baby when Malkyr had fallen.
To defend the Seven Towers.
He had never seen the Seven Towers stand against the Blight. He'd only heard stories.
To hold back the darkness.
The horse's hooves were becoming a thunder. So loud, louder than he'd have thought possible. He held himself straight, sword out.
I will stand when all others fall.
The oncoming Trollocs leveled spears as the distance between the two opposing forces narrowed.
Al-Talid Olara Malkyr. For my sweet land, Malkyr.
It was the oath a Malkyrie soldier took during his first posting to the border. Lan had never spoken it. He did so now in his heart.
Al-Talid Olara Malkyr.
Lan screamed.
Lances set!
Light, but those hoofbeats were loud. Could 6,000 make so much noise? He turned to look at those behind him. At least 10,000 rode there. What? He pressed Mandarb forward through his surprise.
Forward, the Golden Crane!
Voices, shouts, screams of power and joy. The air ahead to the left split with a sudden vertical slash. A gateway 3 dozen paces wide, as large as Lan had ever seen, opened as if into the sun itself. From the other side, the brightness spilled out, exploded out. Charging men in full armor burst from the gateway, falling into place at Lan's flank. They flew the flag of Arafel. More gateways. 3, then 4, then 12. Each broke the field in coordination, charging horsemen bursting forth with lances leveled, flying the flags of Saldaea, Shinar, Kandor.
In seconds, his charge of 6,000 had become 100,000. Trollocs in the front lines screamed, and some of them stopped running. Some held steady, spears angled to impale oncoming horses. Bunching up behind them, not being able to see clearly what was happening in front, other enraged hordes pushed eagerly forward, waving large swords with scythe-like blades and double-bitted battle axes. Those Trollocs at the front, holding spears, exploded. From somewhere behind, Lan Ashaman began to send weaves to rip the earth, completely destroying the front ranks of Trollocs. As the carcasses collapsed to the ground, the middle ranks found themselves completely exposed, facing a storm of hooves, swords, and lances. Lan hit, swinging, crashing Mandarb through the snarling Trollocs. Andir was laughing.
"Back, you fool!"
Lan yelled to him as he lashed out at the nearby Trollocs. "Direct the Ashaman to our wounded. Have them protect the camp."
"I want to see you smile, Lan,"
Andir shouted, clinging to his horse's saddle.
"Show more emotion than a stone for once. Surely this deserves it."
Lan looked at the battle he'd never thought to win, seeing a last stand instead become a promising fight, and couldn't help himself. He didn't just smile. He laughed. Andir obeyed his order, riding off to seek healing and organize the back lines.
"Jophel,"
Lan called.
"Raise my banner high. Malkir lives on this day."
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.